Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, rolling into the Monday Happier Happy Hour. And we're happy to announce we got a fine guest. She is a journalist, Megan O'Matz with ProPublica. Megan, welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Hi, thank you.
Well, we thank you for bringing attention to the extreme gerrymander we got going on here. I'm going to read just the headline, and then I'll ask you about your article. Wisconsin's Republicans went to extremes in gerrymandering. Now they're scrambling to protect that power. Well, before we talk about what they're gonna do, let's talk about what they did. From your reporting, what do you think they did here?
Well, really, the extreme gerrymandering began, as I understand it, back when Scott Walker came into power and the Republicans took over the legislature. And at that point, we had the census being redrawn, and this was coming around about 2011. And they drew lines that made it more favorable for Republicans to win. And then when the 2020 census came, they also tinkered with the maps more to make it even more favorable. We now have a Republican supermajority in the Senate. They're almost there in the Assembly. And it did go through court challenges, and it ended up that the state Supreme Court last year accepted the Republican drawn maps.
Well, Megan, that's a long story as well. You give an example. You showed the Assembly District 73, and that's north Western Wisconsin, all the way up to Duluth, Minnesota. And this used to be a relatively rectangular district, sort of, you know, followed district lines, and it doesn't anymore. And it kind of looks like a dinosaur, doesn't it?
Yeah, the people up there in the northwest corner of the state were telling me that the 73rd Assembly District looks like a T-Rex. And I thought that was interesting. I didn't know quite what to make of it until I saw the outline of the district, and I, just double checked a picture of a T-Rex, and it sure does. It looks like a cartoon drawing of a Tyrannosaurus Rex. And what they did is the Republicans, they took out a big chunk of Douglas County, which happens to be a lean, more liberal, and then they added swaths of Burnett County, which is more conservative. And that's how that helped in that Democrats had held that seat for 50 years. And after the maps changed, a Republican was elected.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Got a fine journalist. She's Megan O'Matz with ProPublica. And Megan's brought attention to the extreme gerrymander here in the state of Wisconsin, authored by Republicans. We're talking about the Assembly District, the 73rd, the fight in 73rd that looks like a T-Rex, which is not exactly the traditional district boundary shape that we would aspire to. And it might be a little cartoonish here, Megan, but so is the assembly member from Wisconsin that's been elected. She's been up to no good. My understanding, she is Republican Angie Sapik, and a lot of her opposition is to things like Black Lives Matter. And let's just say she's supportive of the January 6th rioters, and she now serves in the Wisconsin Assembly in this newly gerrymandered district.
Yes, as I understand it, this was Angie's first run for public office. She'd never held any kind of government position before. She is a part of her family's produce business. They ship onions, onions that are grown, I think, in California, New Mexico, and they ship them into Wisconsin, Minnesota, etc. So she's an onion broker, and I've heard her say that she wanted to join the legislature because she was upset about how COVID was handled. Her daycare closed, other businesses closed. I'm sure it probably impacted the onion business as well. And she didn't really accept that. So that's why she decided to run. And yes, she had some very, provocative, rude tweets, basically, in her history. The Democrats dug those up and they put them on a website that still exists called angiestweets.com. There's a link, I believe, in my story. And there's some, very intolerant things that she says there. But that's, she's maybe speaking for a lot of people who obviously felt that she deserved to be in the legislature.
Well, and here in the state of Wisconsin, we're still fighting the fight over what happened in the election of 2020. And, it seems Wade has cited math, but not to many of the Republican legislators here. I know it. I'm living on the ground. They're still trying to decertify the 2020 election. There was a special investigation. Michael Gableman, a my term corrupted former Supreme Court justice, that said he would strongly suggest we consider decertifying a 2.5-year-old election. So this is still the flavor of the month. And what it's led to here, Megan, is the recent impeachment filing against the Wisconsin Elections Commissioner. They had already taken her nomination up in the Republican-controlled Senate, the two-thirds controlled Senate. And the next threat is they're going to impeach a Supreme Court justice, and these highly gerrymandered districts give them legislative advantages. Whether there's reason, they do have the votes, Megan. They could theoretically move forward successfully with the impeachment of both these figures.
Right. And last week was a really busy week. They were going back and forth in the legislature with this talk of impeaching the newly elected Justice Janet Protasiewicz. She won back in April with about 1 million votes. She beat the Republican by 200,000 votes. And during the campaign, she had said multiple times that she thought the maps were rigged in favor of the Republicans, and that no sensible person could think otherwise, although she made it clear that she was not saying how she would vote on a maps case. So, and of course, the Republicans now believe that that means that she's biased and is not suitable to sit on a maps case, of which there is one before the Supreme Court. So they want her off. And if she doesn't recuse herself, it seems like they are prepared to move towards impeachment. They have, some procedural issues, I think, hurdles, I guess you want to say, to get over. They have to come up with a reason. and she hasn't committed any crime or I don't know, the Constitution also calls for impeachment could be done for corrupt conduct in office. And I don't know what could be corrupt conduct.
They're looking for rationale on right-wing talk radio at this very moment. I guarantee it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Our fine guest. Let me make sure I get your last name right, so I'll look it up. Megan Omatz. And am I saying that right, Megan?
Omatz.
My bad. Megan Omatz from ProPublica here on the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. And Megan, the Princeton group that evaluates, the nonpartisan group that evaluates gerrymandering, just so we can have some empiricals, what did they say about Wisconsin's redistricting under Republicans?
Well, they have given the state a grade of an F for failure to really provide impartial maps that make competitive districts. They are basically have said that the maps are not fair and are among some of the worst in the country. In fact, that they argue that the GOP has gone farther than most states and gerrymandered a supermajority. I will say, too, that the case that's before the Supreme Court now notes that the districts are supposed to be contiguous and compact, and 55 of the 99 assembly districts have disconnected pieces of territory and 21 of the 33 in the Senate. So the majority of the districts have little islands or enclaves floating around. They're not drawing maps in a cohesive way, which means, you know, they're looking for voters that they believe will favor their side.
And Megan, Speaker Robin Voss, the Republican who controls much of everything here in the state of Wisconsin, effectively acknowledged the partisan slant of these maps and said, well, it's within our constitutional right. He responded to your request for comment, did he not?
He did. He gave me a statement through his one of his assistants that basically said it's the Republicans' right as the victorious party to draw the maps, and that they were approved by the state Supreme Court. And he basically said that the Republicans do well in the elections because they have good candidates. And although in a 2021 Senate hearing, he was asked whether there was any partisan advantage in making the maps, and was that any kind of intent in making the maps, and he did say that partisanship was considered as a consideration in making the maps.
And as to the possible impeachment of Janet Protasiewicz, did Speaker Voss speak to that at all? I know momentarily he'd seemingly backed off that initiative, and I mean, we'd heard Dan Knodel now in the state assembly, in the state Senate, had been talking about that before Protasiewicz had even been elected, but seemingly, they'd backed off this tack of seeking to impeach a Supreme Court justice. But now that they've got it back on the table again, did Voss give you any indication what their latest theory is? I know he's impaneled some former Supreme Court justices to advise him. Any comment he gave you, Megan, in the last minute that you can share?
No, but you know, he does, as you said, he has some justices looking at this to advise him on the next steps. So it looks like they are proceeding. Yeah, they have a deadline on whether they can do this before or after December 1st, and the governor can appoint someone to sit in that seat. So there are still some political angles I'm sure they're looking at closely.
Well, I almost think that creates greater urgency. Then they can force a special election next spring. They can bring more conservatives during their primary contest. Megan, I think it's the triangulation of malfeasance. I think they'll do it. Thank you so much for covering it. Megan O'Matty from ProPublica. Folks,
you're welcome.
Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. We'll be right back.
Think you know politics? Think again. Welcome to the Devil's Advocates.
To the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I feel like a loser. Megan O'Matts, our fine guest. Thank you so much for joining us from ProPublica. In my head, I'm like Maddie. So I'm stuck wrong. I apologize, Megan. A fine guest. Appreciate her coming around. Also expecting one more fine visitor this afternoon here in the Solidarity Realty Studios, the WMDX Mad Radio Studios. My pal, Charles Franklin, pollster extraordinaire. We'll get to Charles soon. Also want to get to some other local propositions. There's a sore loser clause that's being circulated right here in the great state of Wisconsin. And I want to share it with you, our fair audience. You can also be a part here, 844-967-2789. Our pal, reporter, journalist extraordinaire, Jesse Apoyan, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Sore loser Bill Barr's candidates who falter in primaries to run write-in campaigns. So let me tell you the real headline. Republicans lay out a legislative proposal to bar sore loser Republicans from running again against Speaker Robin Voss. Because this is really should be like the Adam Steen bill, perhaps. There's maybe two examples. Thank you, Jesse. Let me read some of your fine reporting. Candidates who lose partisan primaries would not be able to register for a general election write-in bid under a proposal introduced by two Republican lawmakers. Here's the quote. A candidate should make a choice to run as a write-in candidate. It should not be allowed as a backup plan for an unsuccessful bid for a party nomination, the bill's authors wrote in a memo seeking co-sponsors. Now, the legislation was introduced Friday by Senator Van Wongard, Republican from Racine, and Rep. John Mako, Republican from Ledgeview. That's up in the Green Bay area, I believe. And it would stipulate that no candidates losing in the partisan primary may file a registration statement to have write-in votes for a candidate counted in the general election. Well, I don't remember any Democrats doing this. What are they talking about? The bill's author said it would close a loophole and adhere to the spirit of existing state law, which bars candidates from running in more than one partisan primary at the same time. Many states have some sort of a sore loser law in the books. Again, here is a statement from Vanguard and Mako. Elections should be orderly, efficient, equitable, and simple. Well, they used to be up until you Republicans started attacking them at every level. But back to their quote. Leaving the door open for unnecessary confusion risks compromising the integrity of our elections and the confidence of the electorate. Sort of ironic and rich when you put it like that, boys. Now, the proposal comes about a year after two GOP candidates for the state assembly ran and lost as write-ins after losing their respective primaries. Dee Neubert ran as a write-in for the Assembly 6th District after finishing second among six Republicans in an August 2022 primary with the backing of the Republican Party of Shawano County. Now, the seat was open following the retirement of Rep. Gary Tauschen, and Neubert argued the winner of the primary and ultimately the general election, Rep. Peter Schmidt, Republican from Bondual, had hidden his previous criminal conviction. Schmidt is the criminal, was charged with a felony, but later convicted of criminal trespassing, a Class A misdemeanor, and disorderly conduct, a Class B misdemeanor, after an incident in which a worker on Schmidt's farm was choked in 2019. Now, I don't make fun of this so much as, wasn't that what Prosser did? I mean, is this sort of a Republican thing? They just choke people? Now, Schmidt pled no contest and was found guilty in 2021. So, you know, not Crudy speculation. That's the facts. And he's the one that won. Now, a court sentenced him to 2 years of probation and ordered him to participate in an anger management program. Schmidt has since said he is a changed man who's devoted to his Christian faith, farming, and working to help others, presumably without choking them. He won the general election with 68.1% of the vote. So anyways, and of course, there's the Adam Steen factor, the Robin Voss factor. Now, Voss, if you'll recall, faced the Adam Steen in the primary, right? Steen was the primary opponent. And Donald Trump came to Waukesha and endorsed his primary opponent. And it was close, folks. I mean, this was just down the road from Voss's district. I was there. Don was there. Hell, we were broadcasting live. Tim Michaels also there. Not much of a candidate. But with a little boost from a few mischievous Devil's Advocates listeners, it came down to less than 300 votes. And that apparently, you know, stung Robin Voss a little, made him a little butthurt, especially when Adam Steen came around twice and did the daily double and ran as a write-in candidate in the general election. Now, that was much less successful, but I already think, you know, damage done, mostly to Voss's ego. So Voss has been a bit of a changed man since this happened. Anyways, new sore loser bill here in the state of Wisconsin to prevent Republicans from running as sore losers, because that's the only examples I see. 844-967-2789. Charles Franklin might find gas, but Wisco Paul, I can give you like a minute until he gets here.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Cootie. The Republicans know no shame. They're going to impeach Megan and also Judge Janet. In the meantime, the Democrats do nothing against the fake electors. So they're perceived as weak, and they're just going to run right over the top of the Democrats like they've done for the last dozen years, unless people call in or whatever. I call in to buy, for all the good it does me, because I'm in a gerrymandered district, but I call in and voice my opinion. And if not for your radio station, I say again, it would be way, way worse. So thanks, Cootie, for what you do. Have a great day.
Thank you, buddy. Wisco Paul, you should take heart in the fact that Kenneth Cheesebro, who's got an October 23rd trial date in Georgia, has called multiple Wisconsin fake electors as witnesses, and Josh Call, and Brian Schimming, and others. Charles Franklin, my fine guest, he's now.
I would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for those meddling devil's advocates.
My mind was blank.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, rolling through the Monday Happier Happy Hour, and I'm happy to announce I've been joined by a fine friend and extraordinary pollster. He's Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette University Law School poll. I'm doing that by memory, Charles. I didn't do so well with the last one.
I think you did pretty well on this one.
I've met you a few times, Charles. Thank you.
Just occasionally.
Welcome to the Mad Radio, the Solidarity Realty Studios.
Always good to be here.
There is a beer fridge, even if you defer. I'm, you know, Wisconsinites should know I am a good host. I did offer.
It's the Wisconsin way.
Charles, you gotta talk me off the ledge, man. I woke up this morning and I was thinking life's pretty good. And I see this new, and I realize it's not a market poll, so it can be discounted slightly. But I see new ABC News, Washington Post polling, and Trump's up 9. And Joe Biden, head-to-head, 51-42, and you look at voters, you look at the entire electorate, either way, Trump's up 9. This is very troubling, Charles. I will not sleep well tonight.
Well, you got to quit paying attention to single polls. That's the basic story. It is a substantial lead in that one poll, but that poll is a clear outlier, and ABC and the Washington Post both branded their own poll as an outlier. They said this is out of line with other polls. I think that's a sign of some integrity, that you don't mislead people or pretend that this is more than it is. But if you look at all of the national polling over the last 2 or 3 weeks, Trump has edged slightly into a lead. In my average, I have it up 1.8 for Trump. Real Clear Politics has it 1.6. 538.com is not yet producing an average or trend, but their numbers are very similar. I think the big point here is that since the beginning of 2022, I have not seen a margin more than 2.5 points on average for either candidate. It's been Biden up a bit. It's been Trump up a little bit. Then it reverses, and in the last few months, Biden has come down a little bit. Trump has gone up a little bit. But again, all within that one guy ahead by 2.5, the other ahead by 2.5, most of the time even closer than that. When we get real close races, or when we have a slight advantage to one candidate, it's not unusual to get an outlier poll that produces a much bigger margin. And that's attention getting and worrisome, but it's really important to put that in the context of all the other polling. And I think right now you'd say a very close race has inched ever so slightly in Trump's direction, ignoring that poll.
I still consider that hair on fire news, if I had any hair. Our fine guest, Charles Franklin, here in the Madison Mad Radio Studios. A couple of other metrics used by ABC News, Washington Post. They're effectively Biden approval numbers. And he's very negative on overall approval, where he's negative 19. That's the subheadline here at ABC News. The economy, he's worse than that. And on immigration, he's abysmal. His support is, I believe, 23%. I don't want to look too closely, Charles. That is very small bar graph.
Yeah, and those are things that actually have been holding up across a bunch of polling. Biden's approval has been between 41 and 42 for months, with his disapproval in the 55, 56 range. Hadn't really trended much one way or another. That's pretty bad. It's roughly where Trump was in 2019, 2020, also in the low 40s for approval the whole time. Part of this is because the opposite party gives a president less than 10 points approval. And so right now it's that less than 10 point Republican approval that pulls Biden way down. But the serious concern for Democrats is that among independents, Biden is underwater. The other thing is on specific issues. Biden does poorly on the economy as a whole, worse on inflation, a little bit better on handling jobs, a lot better on the environment or climate change, and a lot better on abortion. So there are some bright spots there for Biden. But on those bread and butter issues concerning the economy, it's very bad. And the border, I should have mentioned, also quite poor. So these are issues that the campaign surely knows that it has to address over the next, 13 months?
401 days, but who's counting,
Who's counting, indeed. I think it's important to be realistic about where the strengths and weaknesses of the campaign is, and I'm sure the campaign is taking due note of all of this, but I wouldn't freak out yet about one poll that's out of line. There's the other thing, and that's the age issue, which in our polling, the Marquette National polls, we find a lot of Democrats worried about Biden's age. But
and that was reflected also through the ABC polling, as high as 74-75% of Democrats expressing concern about Biden's age.
And the key thing is that is a very real concern. The man will be 82 years old when he's reinstalled if he wins re-election. This is an issue, but it doesn't mean that those Democrats who are concerned about his age are going to vote for Trump. What the biggest fear would be is that they start to drop out of the electorate, not to turn out, not to have the enthusiasm that was so important in his victory in 2020. And there is the smaller issue of what if there are third-party candidates on the ballot, especially in key swing states like Wisconsin.
Folks, you're listening to The Devils Advocates Radio Show. Got a fine pollster, Charles Franklin, Marquette University Law School poll director. And Charles, you and I know it's not really about the popular vote, or Hillary Clinton would have had at least one term. It's about the Electoral College. And it really has come down to just a handful of states. And like it or not, we're one of them. We're one of three, four, five states that the entire nation is pinning its hopes on. And we see margins in this state from as small as, 56, 5,800 in the Neubauer Hagedorn Supreme Court race statewide election to like a massive margin of 21,000-22,000 in a presidential election. This will be the center of the hurricane, and that's part of why the RNC is coming here. Charles, we don't get to escape this. We never get to escape this, do we?
No, we don't. And it's, you know, you just got to remember that four of the last six presidential elections have been decided by less than 25,000 votes here. You got to pay attention to that. Keep your eye on the ball. That turnout matters hugely, and our state remains closely divided. You know, Tony Evers won re-election with just over 3% of the vote margin, but Ron Johnson won by 1%. Tammy Baldwin won by nearly 11 in 2018. So we have had some bigger statewide Democratic wins. But if you look at party identification, if you look at vote choice in the polling, I think you just have to believe we're up for a close election again, and that it really matters. That it matters is a big deal, because one thing we saw was in way back in 2000, when the race was decided by like 6,000 votes, the independent and third party candidates got far more votes than the margin. Then 4 years later, that third party vote collapsed. I think in light of people realizing, wow, this state is really close. It really matters. And if I'm not happy about the top two, maybe I don't want to go to a third. Same thing happened between 16 and 20 when, again, in 16, lots of people voted third party.
Jill Stein, Gary Johnson seemed very appealing when Hillary's got it locked up, everyone told you.
Exactly. And then what happens in 2020, there's again a dramatic drop in third party voting. But now we're 8 years past that 2016 election, especially for newer voters. How many people remember what happened in 16 in the kind of visceral way that people who voted in that election felt after the election was over? The other side is, you know, Donald Trump is fantastic at mobilizing less likely voters to come out and vote for him. But he's mobilized more Democratic less likely voters to turn out as well. Do we see that continue this year, or do we see Democrats pulling back some, or at least feeling more critical of Biden? Last thing I got to get in is, you would not believe this from reading any of the national coverage, but Joe Biden has a higher favorable rating with Democrats than Donald Trump does with Republicans. Biden's favorability with Democrats is 80%, and Trump is 70% with Republicans.
But they're in a contested primary. Biden doesn't have anyone. I don't care. Consider Robert Kennedy Jr. a viable opponent, nor Marianne Williamson. So let's assume he's running unopposed, and Trump's got 5 or 6 quote unquote viable alternatives, and he still got 70% support amongst the electorate.
Yeah, but I'm saying favorable, not percentage voting for him. That's more like 55 for Trump in the party. The thing is, Trump has this amazing grip over Republican politicians who are so afraid to cross him in any way.
Yes, they are.
But their party is actually a little more divided. My point is, there's a lot of tables in the polls that you can look at to say Democrats have qualms about Joe Biden. That's absolutely true. But when it comes to liking him, they're actually quite positive towards him. And when it comes to choosing between Trump and Biden, and that may very well be the choice you actually have to make a year from this November, there's very little crossover from either party. Independents, though, in one poll or another will swing a little bit more one way or more the other. That shows this high tension wire of how do we get a majority on one side or the other in November.
Charles Franklin, there's only been one candidate that I effectively see getting crossover votes, and that's Tammy Baldwin. Now, we hear rumors that Eric Holtby's done some stock selling so the very wealthy businessman can enter the race and, you know, make proper disclosure without telling you too much about his personal finances. But if Holtby enters the race, I've heard of him, but I'm a political junkie. I don't think a lot of people have. How far behind is he? Or if he's the generic Republican, where does that race start from, Charles?
We asked about him in our June Wisconsin poll, and unsurprisingly, very few people had heard of him. Now, he came very close to winning the Senate nomination in 2012, just lost to Tommy Thompson by a couple of points in that primary. But 2012 was an eternity ago, and he's not been visible in state politics in the meantime.
And Tammy ultimately won that race because Tommy got brutalized in that primary, and he was broke going into the general.
Absolutely. And she had a very effective campaign strategy to undermine his strength. That was the other part of it, is her campaign was very effective in the fall. I think in some ways, Hovde is, at the moment at least, one of the best choices the Republicans would have, in the sense that he's got presumably a lot of personal money he can put into the campaign. He is a business person, for what that works in the party anymore. And you've got, on the other hand, David Clark, who is more well-known and more popular with base Republicans, but comes with a whole lot of baggage, and it's not clear whether he's really going to run, and he doesn't have personal resources. And then we have four, I think, other people that are very little known and aren't rich, and we'll see what happens with their campaigns. The bottom line, though, is it's really late in the cycle for not to have a clear Republican in the field yet.
You know, I've strongly suspected Eric Hovde, is getting in the race because there has been a beautiful graphic sign on Highway 51 South for like a month and a half.
Yeah.
Hovde for Senate. Someone got a little ahead of the plan, I think. Some farmer agreed to rent him some space and, you know, put the sign out a little bit early before he had to do the fall tilling. Folks, we got a fine guest. You sticking around? That beer's looking better all the time. Nearly quitting time, but not yet. Come back with us. Charles Franklin, Marquette University Law School polling director, and yours truly. Dom will be back tomorrow. We don't even miss him, do we? Not much.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates. There's nothing like a
sunny day. Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We ain't done yet. I got a fine guest here in the Mad Radio Studios. He is Charles Franklin, Marquette University Law School polling director, friend of ours. Charles, appreciate you coming around. I'm a little more at ease, but not entirely at ease, because even if we set aside the ABC Washington Post poll, you're still telling me Trump's ahead right now nationally, and that's a little unsettling to me. Let's talk about this big GOP debate that nobody's talking about. Now, Trump will not be at the debate, but the Republicans are debating again. And if you didn't know, we won't have it, but they will have it somewhere this Wednesday, September 27th. This is the also-ran debate. They're all also-ran debates compared to Trump because he's not there.
No, and it's not even close. Trump has been consistently either in the high 40s or more recently the mid 50s in virtually every nationwide GOP primary poll. But his lead has increased not because he's doing better, but because Ron DeSantis has just been collapsing and burning for weeks, months, literally now. In one recent New Hampshire poll, Nikki Haley is now in second place, but Trump still has a big lead there.
Does he? I had heard that if there was a primary state that Trump could lose, it would probably be a small population state. New Hampshire's always kind of done their own thing, haven't they, Charles?
They have, and Trump does poll a little worse in both Iowa and New Hampshire than he does nationally. Part of that is the campaign is focused there. That's where the candidates are going and making their cases.
Sure.
But he's still well ahead. Winning with 45% of the vote is just as good as winning with 55% in these winner-take-all Republican primaries. I think the one thing that does stand out is since the first debate here in Milwaukee in August, Haley has come up a few points and has come up fairly consistently. But still in her national polling, she's below 10%, but she's up from 5% before. Ramaswamy had a little bit of a short-term boost, but has trended down. And DeSantis, who was already trending down, has just continued to come down. There's no evidence that he has arrested that free fall.
Well, let me ask you a little bit of a rabbit hole digression, Charles Franklin, but Fox News has announced there will be a debate between DeSantis and Gavin Newsom, the governor of California. It's going to air on Hannity's show, but it's not going to happen until November 30th. I'm thinking DeSantis is going to be broke, home crying in his pillow like Scott Walker did long before November 30th. But let's assume it all plays out. What's the value? As a media piece, I know why Fox News would do it. We know why DeSantis would do it. Why do you think Gavin Newsom signing up for this?
Well, I think Gavin Newsom is positioning himself to be the cheerleader for the Democratic Party, the guy that can go out and make the case for the party. He has been adamant that he is not challenging Joe Biden, but I think it's pretty hard to believe that he's not setting himself up for 2028.
Others
and
are saying
greater power in the party.
Pardon the interruption, Charles. Others, Congressman Phillips today said, someone better than me should run, but if they don't, I might run. Someone's got to run. There's got to be an alternative to Joe Biden for Democrats to choose from. Now, that always seems to alienate people. I think in some small part, that's why Bernie Sanders is not your president, because he alienated Barack Obama by suggesting he should be primaried in 2012. Of course, no incumbent president ever wants to hear that, Charles. Could you see that possibly playing out at this late hour?
I really don't. I think the time for Democrats to have decided to challenge Biden was 8 months ago. And it's just terribly late. I mean, really, we're coming up in just a couple of months on the deadlines to file with states
for
their primaries.
Qualify
for the ballots. To go from 0 to 60 in a presidential campaign in the amount of time left is really hard. And there's a good reason you don't see a bunch of really well-qualified Democrats challenging Biden right now. He's the incumbent president. He's the guy that won last time. You're not going to change horses in the middle of this stream. And think of the damage you could do to yourself within the party by challenging a sitting president who then goes on to lose because you helped damage him in the campaign. I think there's lots of good reasons not to try to replace Joe Biden. And there are some reasons too. The age.
Why do you think there are so many conspiracies amongst the right? They think it's going to happen. I've heard even moderates are telling me Joe's stepping down and they're going to pull out Michelle Obama.
Everybody
loves her and she's going to win.
I've heard that. I'm a little puzzled by it.
I know. Where's that come from? You don't have to speculate, Charles.
Actually, I don't know where. Do not know where it comes from. But it's interesting that I've heard it floating around and I just kind of go, where is this? But here's the real thing. The kind of, you know, pejoratively we necklace clutching, pearl clutching is a typical problem in both parties at one time or another, but certainly with Democrats right now. I think you just at some point over the next few months recognize that this is your guy. You're going to get behind him or you're going to accept the alternative from the other side. What do you want to do? As I said at the beginning of the interview, you know, there are some real strengths that Biden has, but there are also some real weaknesses. And the thing to do is not think that you're going to have some savior walk in at the last minute. The thing to do is recognize where his weaknesses are and try to ameliorate those and recognize where his real strengths are and convince your voters of that. The one thing we've seen in our polling is that independents who only lean to the Democratic Party have been slipping a little bit. Those are exactly the folks that don't have the intense loyalty of a true Democrat,
yeah,
who need to be getting messages about what's good about Biden and why those strong Democrats are for him rather than wishing he would drop out and some savior would come in. So that's not an unusual problem, actually, but we're right in the throes of it at the moment.
Charles, I know you got some polling coming up, both national polling, my understanding, next Wednesday and Thursday. But also some state polling coming up in October, right?
Well, it'll be out in November.
Well, may I encourage you to consider? I used to always want you to ask the weed question for me. But here's one. Economic development. The bounce back grants here in the state of Wisconsin, Charles, I think they have been the greatest economic development tool the state has seen in my lifetime, because I've gone out there and tried to rent commercial real estate and see there's no vacancy on Main Street, because it's been very effective. If you get around to it, for Crudy's sake, ask. Find out if people have any perception of that program, because it's been $100 million or more, and certainly it seemingly has better impact than, let's say, a manufacturer's and agricultural tax cut for rich guys. But that's just one man's opinion. Charles Franklin, always appreciate you coming around, sir. We'll do it again with Dom tomorrow. Don't forget, we're going out to the Bavarian Beer Haas Thursday night. A little politics, then Packers. Hope you can join us there. That's in Glendale. It's worth the Google. And don't forget, Packer game on our favorite, the flagship WRJN 1400 AM. Tell your friends you're not going to want to miss the Packers or Maggie Dawn. She's next. Then stick around. Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Thank you for listening.